Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
As Iron Man, all jets ablaze, he's fighting and smiting with repulsor rays. Amazing armor,
as Iron Man,
a blazing bomber.
Welcome back to issue 29 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's getting a rash from its superhero costume. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
Itchy.
You're not using the right materials, I think.
No, I should be wearing my underpants under the costume.
And you need a good cotton fiber.
Yeah. Something that breathes,
That's right, you know? Absolutely. This is why if you look at the new Spider-Man costume from the new Spider-Man movie that's about to come out, his costume looks like a Nike shoe. Have you seen
that? It does. It's got incredible grip.
It does.
And it costs a fortune.
And yet this is something he was supposed to have been able to sew by himself in his bedroom.
He's got the proportional sewing skills of the spider.
Ah, that's what it is. All right. Okay, another week more comics.
Yes, well, this issue, it's the beginning and the end of another DC series. And while the company opens up its own shop, plus Watchmen are best served with butter or jam. More on that later. What's coming up for Marvel in the next few months and the return of the Guardian to the Galaxy,
woohoo!
Plus the Arrow trailer is finally here, and the Avengers Blu-ray details already.
That's a bit fast.
It's very fast. Then it is Disney, after all. Now, Kick-Ass Pick of the Week, Iron Man Extremis. But first, it's our vintage clip of the week.
This is the laboratory of Anthony Stark, millionaire scientist and sportsman. His assistants are preparing to test a giant wind tunnel. In his office nearby, Tony Stark is being quizzed by newsmen about his new racing car.
Yes, gentlemen, this is the new Stark Special. I expect big things of it today in Minneapolis. I'd be there myself if the testing of the wind tunnel could be postponed, but I'll watch the race on TV.
With only 2 hours to race time, have you been in contact with your crew?
No, but I will be shortly on my Talk C radio phone over there. Although the track is 300 miles away, the crew and I can contact one another on this. Well, that's all for today, gentlemen. I'm due at the testing site shortly.
Meanwhile, back at the wind tunnel...
Turn on the oar! The wind velocity panel is going to explode! The wind machine's gone berserk! Help! Hurry! Contact Mr. Stark! Tell him what's happening!
Take it easy. Iron Man's in the plant. He'll handle it.
I doubt if even he can do anything about this situation.
Little does anyone dream who Iron Man really is.
And this would happen today. Oh, well, there's an hour or two before race time.
Look! There's Iron Man now! Well, what could he do?
I know one way to make the fans stop whipping up a hurricane. I'll blow up a storm of my own. By becoming a human fan.
It's all just scrap metal now.
I'll report the damage to Mr. Stark. He'll check with you later.
Can I just say that everybody seemed very calm except for that one guy?
It's Iron Man, but what could he do?
And then you got Iron Man going, well, I'll just see if I can take care of this with a wind tunnel of my own. And the other guy's going, relax, Iron Man's on the scene.
Two things on that. First of all, I think we propose that we do this podcast from now on our Talk C radios.
Absolutely. And the other thing I wanted to say about that was the giant wind tunnel sounds like me after curry, but that's beside the point.
Does the human fan cancel out the human torch?
Just blow him out. Dearie me. I just love the fact that everybody seems so calm except for that one guy going, oh my god.
They were pretty chill. There was a wind tunnel. They were hanging out. No one could light a cigarette, but it was fine.
That's all right.
And that was, of course, from the Marvel Superheroes series 1966. That was from the Invincible Iron Man episode Double Disaster. A veritable treasure trove was 1966.
It was that entire range of cartoons. Just brilliance.
Iron Man actually made a few appearances in various animated series between the 60s and 80s. So I've got heaps. So if we do another Iron Man one coming up, I've got another 80s clip that I wanted to use, but this one was gold.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be doing more Iron Man between now and next year.
Oh, absolutely. But I think around the 3rd of May next year, we might be doing some more Iron Man.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. So, David, what have you been reading this week?
I've been reading a lot of the New 52 stuff, as always. It is the Night of Owls. Going on. So there's been a lot going on in there. But I've got to say that I think my two favorites, and which is weird because you'd think it would be the prime Batman books, but my two favorites have actually been Red Hood and the Outlaws and Batgirl, who both have to take on individual Talons because they've answered the call, obviously. And they both have a situation where they're actually reflecting on the Talon and seeing it in their own lives. And they're very interesting because they kind of go deep. And they're also showing a human side to these Talons.
I haven't caught up with all of the Night of the Owls ones. I'm still kind of, I guess, in the mid-afternoon of the Owls at this point. I read Catwoman this week. I think that's a new one out this week as well, number 9.
Right. I haven't read that yet.
It has a similar thing where she's got to protect someone. In her case, it's Penguin. And I'm really liking Catwoman as a book at the moment, though, as well, just completely separate from Night of the Owls. And I really like the way DC's actually tied in Night of the Owls into all the Bat books without kind of dominating that. So it's kind of like, yes, we're acknowledging that it's happening, but then we cannot just go on with our own story next month if we want, and the main Bat book will go back to
Absolutely. I think it's a really clever way of doing a tie-in because you also don't have to read them all. No. There are all these little side stories, like the one in Red Hood and the Outlaws and the one in Batgirl in particular, and I'm assuming Catwoman is the same, they're not related to the story.
They're not essential, absolutely.
They're just their dealings with an individual Talon.
Yes.
And I think that's really interesting, the way they're handling it.
It's a really good crossover, and I think DC's got it, definitely got it right this year, and I'm excited for the War of the Trinity War next year if it's going to be anything like this.
Yeah, and we're actually running two crossovers at the same time because I'm also reading the Teen Titans Legion of Superheroes Superboy crossover, where they've basically been taken by nowhere and they're being pitted against each other, almost Hunger Games style. And it's actually very interesting. It's very interesting. It's basically the way Nowhere finds its soldiers is they put all these meta humans together, and whoever's left standing at the end, they get basically recruit. So it's kind of interesting, and it's the way that it's actually, because the Legion has no idea who the Teen Titans are, and the Teen Titans have no idea who the Legion is, and so it's like this very uneasy alliance going on. So it's intriguing. It's an intriguing series.
Also very intriguing is Justice League number 9. Justice League is, of course, the tentpole of the DCU, and this latest issue is no exception.
It's good. It's real good.
It's got about 400 covers by the looks of it, Justice League number 9. But this character, Mr. Graves, who seems to be the author of this book that's been running through, very intriguing character. He finds out at the start of issue 9 that he has no chance of living, but then he takes an action which seems to transform him somewhat. Meanwhile, you've got Colonel Trevor, who briefly had a fling with Wonder Woman, at least that's what the media are beating him up over, are down on his luck as well. And you're starting to see the Justice League forming together, and there's a problem at Arkham, so Batman calls in Superman to help him out. And
one of my favorite lines in the issue, though, as well, where Bruce Wayne calls him up and says, "What you doing for lunch?"
Yeah. He just texts him, actually.
Yeah, that's right, he texts him. That's right. "What are you doing for lunch?" And the next thing you see Superman bursting through the door, you know?
So you've got that going on. You've got the Flash and Lantern working together over in Flash's hometown.
Yep.
Flash desperately wanting to play bad cop, which I think was a wonderful thing.
Oh, and then that line where he says, "Now we have to call her in."
Yeah. And of course, Wonder Woman arrives with her lasso of truth. But it's a wonderful little book, and it is kind of what you would expect from a book that contains all the heavy hitters. And what we were talking about before the show was really interesting. The backup book, which is of course the Shazam story, leading into what we assume is going to be a larger Shazam storyline that runs through the DCU, particularly given that that Free Comic Book Day book seemed to involve sort of
the wizards and everything. Yeah,
the wizards. Yeah, very much like Shazam. You're right. Like, you know, the character was fairly unlikable to start with, but he seems to be developing a little bit of likability. And introduced Dr. Sivana by the end of the as well.
I was about to say, interestingly enough, he's actually still fairly unlikable. But there's glimmers of it now where you go, oh, I can see that there's actually the line where he says, I don't like bullies.
Bullies, yeah.
You know?
Which I've got to say, I don't know whether they've been watching Captain America.
Well, yeah, that did occur to me. But it's something that a kid would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm starting to realize why he would be selected to be Shazam.
Yeah, so that's an excellent book. Definitely, if you're going to pick up one DC title, read Justice League.
Hmm.
But I think we could both agree there's about a dozen titles that are must reads.
There are, and I noticed on your must reads list here, you've actually put Saga. Now, I haven't read Saga 3 yet, but I really liked 1 and 2.
Look, Saga 3, you're really starting to get a sense of this universe that living in. I'm intrigued. This is, of course, not a DC title. This is over. Now, who are the publishers again? Was that an Icon book?
Oh, Saga. Hold on one second. I'll have to find out. Keep talking. I'll find out for you.
And it's an Image book.
It's an Image. Okay.
Yeah, and Saga is a terrific book. We talked about this earlier on the show about this kind of – it's sort of like – it's hard to explain. It's kind of like a science fiction thing meets fantasy.
It's fantasy fused with sci-fi. It's a really intriguing world he's created.
And you basically got this couple on the run with a newborn baby because their union is kind of an illegal one. He's sort of this horned creature. She's got wings, and they've had this baby who's narrating the story as it goes through. And I'm finding that Brian K. Vaughan, who's written this, each issue, he's just giving us a little bit more of this world, and I'm finding myself suckered into it.
Yeah. I agree.
So it's amazing. I think it's probably one of the best new titles this year.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of new titles. We're going to talk about a few more of those new titles as the year goes on. But there's been a whole bunch of new stuff coming out over the last couple of months.
Yeah,
a lot of
amazing
issue ones.
Yeah. Look, but meanwhile, over in Marvel, there's a lot of essential reading over there at the moment. But every month, Daredevil proves to be one of the best books of the month.
I agree.
And the new issue of Daredevil came out this week, Daredevil 13. We've just finished the crossover with Avenging Spider-Man and Punisher, which was excellent. But this continues that story in Daredevil 13 as Matt carries on the idea of having to protect this bit of information that he's got embedded in a Fantastic Four costume.
Yeah,
he's starting to involve other people from the Marvel universe as well, which you'll see in this issue.
Also, can we just talk about his date?
His date was wonderful.
Was that just terrific? Where she wore a blindfold to see what the world was like for him.
And like, you know, and he sort of kids at the start of it saying like she thinks I'm blind, but she's constantly trying to catch him out because she, like, everyone seems to, it's a public, you know, knowledge that Matt Murdock is Daredevil, but he's denied it, and everyone seems to have collectively sort of decided to agree, okay, whatever he wants.
Well, he's had a retraction put as well.
Yeah.
So publicly, he's had a retraction. So everybody's kind of finally going, okay, well, maybe he's not, blah, blah, blah. But she's just doggedly going after it.
And she's trying to constantly catch him out. But they're clearly falling for each other until something happens at the end of their date, which leads into the rest of the story. But it's such a wonderfully written issue. And everything about this new run of Daredevil has got classic Daredevil in it because they refer back to those really dark episodes, but you kind of feel it could be going in that darker direction, but it's still got this fun adventure thing. And I think you said this about the Marvel movies. They've got this high-spirited adventure kind of thing going to them, which the DC movies at the moment aren't doing because they're very dark and, you know, The Dark Knight Rises. This is kind of doing that in comic book form. It's just doing good old-fashioned adventure stories with Daredevil with some very, very clever writing.
I agree, and I can speculation time because we don't know the answer to this.
Mm.
What is in the drawer? What has Foggy found?
Oh, it could be anything.
I know.
I honestly don't even know if I can guess at this point.
When he opens the drawer and he goes, "Oh, Matt." And you go, what is it? What is it? Tell me.
Season one of Glee. I don't
know. He's got the DVD of the Glee specials, right?
Yeah. It's the Star Wars holiday special.
Oh, all right.
David, is it time for some news?
Oh, you know what? It could be if I had a soundboard ready. But yeah, here you go.
What a scoop!
What you got for me?
Damn, that's jaunty, but the first story isn't so jaunty. At least not
No, it is.
It is. Now, David, you know how you were saying that Justice League International, all it needed was a heavy hitter and it could be a good book?
Yep.
Well, it didn't find one. It's been cancelled.
And didn't we call it?
We certainly. I think we've called it every episode.
We called this a while ago saying this book will not last.
No, look, as of issue 12, which is 3 months away, Justice League International will end. It'll be issue 12 plus the annual that's coming out that same month. So those annuals are coming out around the issue 12 mark, David.
All right, so my question is, who do we salvage out of Justice League International? Because they're going to salvage something. They'll salvage Booster Gold.
I think Booster Gold, Booster Gold probably should get his own book.
Possibly. He had his own book prior
to the time traveling book.
He had his own book prior to this actually happening, the 52 happening. So we'll see what happens. The Green Lantern. Now we're talking about Guy here. Guy's actually got his own book.
Yes, so that's he's right. All right. So he's got something to do. Batman's obviously got several of his own books.
Batman's got enough on his plate. He's also got some new books coming out soon. So we've got Medusa.
Oh, I don't really care.
No, and I don't think she does either. No. I don't think we really care about General, what's his name, in Iron. He's always been a bit of an Iron Man knockoff anyway.
Well, this is something that we've said here Bob Harris said about this. He said that it doesn't mean these characters are going to go away. One thing I really think is exciting is that you'll see OMAC land in another book. You'll see Hawk and Dove land in another title. This is the fourth time I've used this term, so again, I apologize, but we are world-building these characters. Even if their books are going away, they're still part of the DC story. We'll still be seeing them, and I think he could have added, but these ones just aren't profitable.
Yeah, or we could say that we don't really need OMAC to land in another book.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, and I think once the book is finished and once the annual comes out, I suspect the annual will be something that is launching a new title. That's due out in August. We only have solicitation information up to August at the moment. So one would expect that in September or October there will be a new book announced. This is the first anniversary. I apparently around in September, after all the issue 12s, they're going to be doing issue zeros of all the books just to celebrate the first year of New 52.
Don't do that.
But they're not going. Then they'll return to regular numbering after that. This is what I've been hearing on the grapevine.
I'm wondering, quite frankly, and this is all rumor, speculation, and so forth, but I'm wondering what's going to happen after the Trinity War. Because now that we've kind of established that Pandora altered the reality of the world, which is kind of what gave birth to the New 52, do you think, we were really pondering this the other day, do you think there is a possibility that DC would say, oh yeah, this was all just in Pandora's thing, here we go, back to normal?
Look, I've thought this for a little while, it's a possibility, particularly given that they've set up the idea that there are multiple realities out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And certainly that I think it was in the latest Justice League. I could be wrong. But was Batman reading the letter that Flash gave him at the end of Flashpoint?
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Because he's got in the latest Justice League, and I'm just seeing if I can find it. So I'm just going through my issue here. I think it's the latest Justice League. Batman's standing. I believe it's Justice League. Batman's standing in the
near
in
the
cave.
End?
Yeah,
the
here
end?
He is. We're talking. It's about 6 or 7 pages in. And Batman's looking at a letter in a glass case, and you can just see a few letters from it. There's one thing I know about life. Know something happened by, and some happened. who make things happen. And then there's written Barry Allen was, now correct me if I'm wrong, but the letter he got from his father was given to Barry Allen to take
back.
So to me, that looks like he's held on to the letter. And the Bat books are the one set of titles that haven't changed.
That's
so
true.
Is it that Batman is the only person in this reality who hasn't noticed anything that's gone, that sort of, sorry, is the only person in this reality who remembers the old DCU?
I'm actually going to see if I can, I'm looking up right now, the last page of Flashpoint. I want to see if we actually catch a look at that letter. Hang on a second. The handwriting looks very similar. There's only one thing that I know about life. I know some things happen by chance. There it is.
That's it. So there you go.
There you go. He has the letter.
He has the letter, which means there is continuity between the two universes at the moment.
Ooh.
In Justice League, no less.
In Justice League. That is so interesting. It never even occurred to me.
No, I read Justice League 9 this afternoon, and it jumped out at me, but I hadn't had a chance to check Flashpoint, so excellent. So I think you could be right. I think there is potential that the old world could come back.
I have – it's been gnawing at me. And I was actually talking to our good friend David Longo over coffee on Friday. Mm-hmm. And he was actually asking the same thing. He says, do you think they could ever go back to the old universe? I was going, I actually don't know. But it got me really thinking about this, thinking, is this all one monumental year-long event?
Look, I wouldn't put it past DC.
And then, if you know what,
they've recently cancelled subscriptions to a bunch of books. They said that we're doing this because these subscriptions were ones that the number of subscriptions don't justify actually having subscription titles for them. We're offering people other things, but you can still get them through the shops. I'm thinking they're starting to pull back on a few books now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we might be rolling a few things back in a few months' time.
I reckon Trinity War is going to be a lot. The Trinity Wars is going to be a lot more important than we think it is.
Yeah, I think that's why they put. Look, usually whatever they put in the Free Comic Book Day book is setting up a big event. So they've set up Brightest Day, Blackest Night in one of the Free Comic Book Days. They set up the Superman War in one of those Free Comic Book Day books. They're setting up the Trinity War in this one. So
yeah,
let's watch out for that next year.
I think this is fascinating. I think DC may have just proved themselves to be even more clever than we thought.
And what's interesting, that's one panel out of all of Justice League 9.
Yep.
That, as you said, you almost kind of dismissed it.
I missed it.
Yeah.
I missed it. I went right past it. It didn't even occur to me. And you bring it up, and then we look at Flashpoint, and we go, oh, my God, there it is, you know? So it's like the fact that I missed Pandora in Flashpoint.
That's right. Yeah, and as did I. So.
Because when I read Flashpoint, the fact that she was in that one panel didn't even occur to me because it wasn't important. Mm. I was looking at all the other pictures in that panel. I didn't see her. And so then when we start talking about the women in red, then we go, wait a minute, we've seen her before. We go back. This thing has been – that means if this is actually a situation where we are going to have this big event where it's going to – this has been like years in the planning.
I think so. I think if they're doing what we think they're doing – they couldn't leave that to chance.
No. And I think that's really amazing. And the question is, how many fans will they alienate? How many fans will go, that was genius, and come back to the books?
Well, I think DC's one step ahead of the game because they've opened up their own shop online. They've got shopdcentertainment.com, so they've gotten away from those pesky things like comic book retailers and other websites.
Right, right.
So they've got their own direct marketing line now directly to the DC universe, to DC fans. So just check that out.
Is that open to the whole world or is it just US?
It's open to the whole world by the looks of it.
Cool.
I haven't actually tried to order anything from there, but it looks as though it's open to everyone.
I might have to go and peruse that shop.
I think so. There's a few good – it's a good thing for figures and statues and things like that.
Absolutely. And speaking of things that you can buy –
how do you like your Watchmen, David?
Nice and light tan in color.
Well, WB and Dynamic Forces, who do a lot of kind of special one-off collectible things, have teamed up. And this story comes from Major Spoilers. For something that would make Alan Moore roll in his log cabin.
He's probably got one in his log cabin.
I'd like to think this is how he makes his toast. They've released a Watchmen toaster. it comes in the big Watchmen box.
I think the box is more impressive than the toaster.
Yeah, the toaster itself is just a black toaster with the Watchmen logo on it. and you know, on just slice, the collected toasters will imprint iconic images on your favorite Warner Brothers films and television series onto slices of bread to make a fun impression on your breakfast, lunch, or midnight snack.
Can we point out, though, because I actually read this article, and I love this article, because it's not just The Watchmen. Can I point out that this company has got a collection of showcase, it's a toaster collection, and you can actually have, are you ready? You can have The Wizard of Oz, A Christmas Story, Where
a
the
Christmas
Wild...
Story, A Christmas Story.
A Christmas Story toaster, Where the Wild Things Are, The Goonies, Gremlins, Little Shop of Horrors, Watchmen, of course, Friday the 13th, which I think is my favorite. You've got to have raspberry jam with that one, though, all right? So, oh, yeah. Friday the 13th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Mad Magazine, what me worry, and then Friends.
It's obviously grilled cheese on toast, that one.
I think this is brilliant. I think it is. Talk about ingenious. You go, I'm going to get a black toaster, and I'm going to make a print on the side. There you go.
Well, I think someone says in the comments on this article, just what Alan Moore intended.
Oh, man.
And somebody else says, what's next? A Gone with the Wind waffle maker.
Oh, I buy it.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Okay, well, from DC back to Marvel. Both major companies announced their August solicitations this month, but there were quite a few titles in the Marvel one that kind of jumped out at me, given that everything else was Avengers versus X-Men.
Right.
Some of the ones that jumped out at me, first of all, there's going to be a new Hawkeye ongoing series from August.
I'll give it benefit of the chance.
Gambit's getting his own ongoing series.
That I'm not really interested in.
Now, the first X-Men has been announced, and it seems to be that it's a prequel to the... we were talking about first X-Men last issue.
Yeah.
What it's actually going to be is a prequel to Xavier's X-Men. So it's going to be what were the X-Men doing before they were X-Men?
Really? So, have we run out of X-Men stories?
It's another Wolverine story.
Right. So this is just basically saying we've run out of ideas, and here we go.
Well, speaking of running out of ideas, they're doing some annuals. There's going to be a Daredevil annual.
Well, that was kind of inevitable, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, we get... the last thing that I've mentioned on there is that there is a new series coming out. It's a new one-off series, but it feels a little bit familiar. It's called Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe.
Well, where have I heard that before?
Now, I'm not sure why they're doing this because, you know, we know the Punisher has already killed the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
They're releasing four issues almost simultaneously. The final issue has... Deadpool holding a sword to Punisher's throat. So that's obviously a little reference to Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe. The solicitation is, what if everything you thought was funny about Deadpool was actually just disturbing? What if he decided to kill everyone and everything that makes up the Marvel Universe? What if he actually pulled it off? Would that be fun for you? The Merc with a Mouth takes a turn for the twisted in a weekly horror comic like no other.
A horror comic.
Horror comic.
Interesting. All right. Well, look, we'll wait and see. I think it's, I don't know why. I don't know why they're doing it, but, you know.
I think they're just trying to pull Deadpool back into the Marvel U by killing them, presumably.
Now,
they're building up for that new movie.
Somebody was telling me, maybe it was my son. I can't remember who was telling me now. Somebody was telling me that they're actually thinking about killing Deadpool off.
Which would be weird, given that they're also thinking of making a movie with him.
Yeah, but they can make a movie. They've got tons of issues.
That's true.
I'm just because I think I can't even remember where I read this. And I read this or heard this from someone who was saying that there was talk about the fact that Deadpool basically didn't want to keep going. He wanted to kill himself, basically, you know?
Well, maybe that's how he's going to do it.
Maybe. I don't know.
That it'll be the same as the Punisher kills the Marvel Universe ending.
Just kill everybody.
There's only one left.
The other thing that I think is fascinating, and I don't know if it's actually ending or not. I've heard rumors that it is ending. You know, the... independent, the boom title, Irredeemable.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I've been hearing rumblings and rumors saying that they're going to end the series, which I think is a good idea because there's only so far you can take it. And then in the last issue I just read, it just said at the very last panel, it said to be concluded.
Interesting.
And I went, oh, Really? So I thought that was very interesting too. All this stuff coming and going. There you go.
Now, speaking of last panels,
yes.
There's some spoilers ahead here, people. So if you haven't read Avengers Assemble number 3,
which I haven't, so
tune out for about a minute because we're about to get spoilery. And you may not have either, but I'm going to spoil it for you.
Anyway, you can spoil it for me. It's all right.
Now, Avengers Assemble is one of the books that was released by Marvel to kind of give people who were interested in the movies a chance to jump onto the comics.
Right.
So Avengers Assemble is in its third issue. At the end of that third issue, no-brainer, Thanos was introduced.
Huh. Yeah, okay.
So that was signaling the start of, obviously, Thanos coming back into the Marvel Universe. Another no-brainer, given that, more spoilers here, people, because this is from the end of the Avengers film, Thanos appears in the mid-credit sequence at the end of Avengers.
Mm. It's nothing to do with the actual plot of the film.
No. So it's setting up something for future Marvel Universe movies. So the fact that they're reintroducing him into the Marvel Comics universe is significant because they're building up that in both fans' minds. They want a bit of cross promotion with Thanos and the films coming out. So there's a bit more of that awareness about there.
Yeah, yeah.
What a lot of people have speculated is that this intergalactic thing is going to lead up to Guardians of the Galaxy because multiple pronunciations of Kevin Feige,
whatever.
he's constantly, every time he's interviewed, he really seems to be hammering home Guardians of the Galaxy.
He's really into that.
And, well, it seems as though it's happening in the comics as well, because as of Avengers Assemble number 6, Comic Book Resources exclusively revealed that the Guardians of the Galaxy would be making their return to the Marvel Universe as of Avengers Assemble number 6.
Interesting.
And there's a big cover with all of the Avengers from the Marvel movies. So you've got on the cover there Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, Thor, Black Widow.
Yep.
Mixing it up with the more recent collection of the Guardians of the Galaxy. So what they're actually saying there is that they think that this is a way of doing more with these characters so they can give people who maybe only seen the film a chance to sort of go, well, who the hell was that guy at the end? And this is kind of an explanation for them. But anyone who knows about the Thanos storyline knows that the Guardians were very, very closely tied to Thanos. So yeah. I think that Marvel are very cleverly setting up Thanos, the Guardians, and their Marvel Cinematic Universe to be a synchronous thing.
But can we pull off Rocket Raccoon in a live-action film?
Yes, we can, David. We have to.
We have to. I want to know if we can actually make that Green Girl work in live-action because she's awesome.
Yeah, I'm always down for Green Girl. Well, they managed to get Green Girls right in the 1960s with the Star Trek TV series.
Yeah, but they didn't look like her.
No, they didn't. David, it's time for some movie news.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, go on.
I thought we were talking movie news there for a
minute. Well, it was sort of straddling both things. But this isn't really movie news. It's more TV news.
Okay.
Because finally, we know that Green Arrow has been picked up as a series.
Yep.
Now it has a trailer. In fact, about 3 different clips got released this week. There was originally a little promo clip showing that Green Arrow was beginning.
Yep.
And we've got links to these all in our show notes. And it showed him throwing up a whole lot of tennis balls and thunking, you know, 5 arrows through the center of each of them. So
I saw that clip. That was pretty cool.
So, yeah, tennis balls. His city is now safe from tennis ball attacks. Mm. They also put out an official trailer a couple of days later. And I've got the audio of that here. So let's play a little bit of that.
Stranded here for 5 years. For 5 years, I've had only one thought, one goal. Survive.
Oliver Queen is alive, found in the North China Sea 5 days ago.
You died. My brother and my father died. I went to your funerals.
You can survive this. Make it better. Right my wrongs.
What happened to you on that island?
A lot.
This city's gone to crap. Your dad sold his factory just in time.
I am returning. Not the boy who was shipwrecked, but the man who will bring justice to those who have poisoned my city. My father left me with a list of names. Those who rule my city through intimidation and fear. Every last one of them will wish I had died on that island.
He was wearing a hood, a green hood, and he had a bow and arrow.
I will put out an EPB on Robin Hood.
Did your father survive that accident? Did he make it to the island? Did he tell you anything?
He told me I'm gonna kill you.
He's here! All units converge!
It looks like Starling City has a guardian angel.
Tell me you saw that.
Nobody can know my secret.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It looks kind of cool. Now, I was looking forward to this anyway, but for a CW series, that kicks ass.
I know. It sounds like they've got all the key components there.
Look, they've changed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But they've made it an action series for a modern audience, and I'm cool with that.
I really hope that they do call him Green Arrow in the show, but I've been hearing rumblings that he just calls himself Arrow.
Well, maybe they're staying away from all things green after Green Lantern.
There is that.
That seems like they're just calling him Arrow in the series, because the official synopsis says, as you probably picked up from that, after a violent shipwreck, billionaire playboy Oliver Queen was missing and presumed dead for 5 years before being discovered alive on a remote island of the Pacific. Now, there are a later clips that have come on that sort of there's a new clip that just literally went up before we went started recording this, so I'll have that up on my site shortly. But it's a clip talking about his ordeal on the island, so you'll clearly get some of that in the pilot episode as well.
Cool.
And he returns home to Starling City, so they've renamed it from Star City for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know why they did that, but anyway,
that's odd. But he's still got a mother. He's devoted mother Moira, his beloved sister Taya, and his best friend Tommy welcome him home. They've since Oliver's been changed by his ordeal on the island. Oliver hides the truth about the man he's become. He desperately wants to make amends to the actions he took as the boy he was. Most particularly, he seeks reconciliation with his former girlfriend, Laurel Lance, which is setting up potential Black Canary. There. As Oliver reconnects with those closest to him, he secretly creates the persona of Arrow. So they're actually calling it officially there,
Arrow
yeah. in the thing. They've introduced a few other characters. He's got a bodyguard called John Diggle.
Yeah.
They've introduced also Detective Quentin Lance, who seems to be probably the guy you heard at the end saying, tell me you saw that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that they're setting up a kind of thing where obviously, Arrow's going to be fighting for justice. He's got his family to contend with as Oliver Queen and his business, as well as being hounded by this cop. So you do have all the elements there for a good ongoing series.
And if they get this right and this becomes a success, the people who are producing Powers are going to kick themselves.
Yeah.
Because they had it. They had it all ready to go.
This is the biggest new show of the season, certainly for CW.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be one of the biggest shows of the season, full stop.
Here's hoping we can...
Well, the pilot will be anyway. The pilot will be well watched, I think. But whether they can sustain it after that, I'm not sure.
I'm hoping it's successful because we need some good genre television. So,
oh, look, it's been so long.
Yeah, it has.
We haven't had a Star Trek series on air for a good 5 years, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, now that Smallville's gone as well. I mean, we've got no major science fiction-y.
Stargate went last year
as well. It's like, I don't know. We just don't seem to have a lot of genre. We lost Chuck.
You know?
It's like, the only thing we've got really right now is fantasy, which is Game of Thrones, and that's premium television.
Yeah.
I
you're right. I mean, not least of which, it's good superhero television. And if they play their cards right, they could make this part of a bigger DC cinematic universe.
Mm.
So starting with Man of Steel next year, along with this series as well. So fingers crossed.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of cinematic universes, we've all seen The Avengers, haven't we?
Well, yeah, that's that little indie film, right?
Yeah, it came out, hardly made any box office, just $1 billion or so.
Right, right.
And it's going direct to DVD and Blu-ray in September. Part of that's true. The Avengers, the biggest film of the year so far, is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, according to several sources, including including Blu-ray.com and Joe Blow.
Yep.
They've both reported that, and they've got different information on both sites, but they agree on the specs for the Blu-ray. What is really interesting is we've been hearing about this half hour of excised footage. Now, it's not actually going to be an extended cut, but all of that footage does look like it's going to make it on there.
I am disappointed they're not going to reintegrate it.
I think that Disney might go for a double dip on this one.
I think they might.
Now, but what's really exciting, though, is that it's got the deleted scenes on there. I'm also very excited that there's a Marvel one-shot on there called Item 47.
What is Item 47, do you think?
I reckon it's one of two things. I reckon it's either something to do with the Tesseract. Yep. When they said they mentioned in the movie, we found it at the bottom of the ocean when we were looking for you.
Right.
So it could be the story. I think it's more likely it's when they went and retrieved the bit out of the destroyer to make the gun that Coulson fires in the film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which would be an excuse to have another one-shot with Agent Coulson.
Oh, it's got to be Coulson because all the one-shots have been Coulson. So
yeah, that would be your excuse to have a Coulson one-shot. But it's clearly about Coulson or someone from S.H.I.E.L.D. going and retrieving an item. So I'm very excited.
Yes, no, I'm very excited. And I'm also very excited by looking through these deleted scenes as to what is going to be added. And the most important one, of course, is the one that Ruffalo actually talked about, which is it's not even saying it's a deleted scene. It's saying extended scene Banner and the security guard, which is very important because apparently that's what's missing. That's the reason why he comes back to the battle.
Well, there's two scenes that we already know about, which is the one that you've just mentioned. There's also Steve Rogers' Man Out of Time,
yes,
which is what Joss Whedon's already referred to as being the scene in the apartment with Cap.
Yep.
What I think we're going to get a whole lot more Maria Hill, and you and I both said that she was noticeably absent from the film.
Yeah.
There is an alternate opening and an alternate ending, both marked Maria Hill interrogation.
Yeah, so it looks like the story is being told in flashback.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also, there is another one where Fury and Hill discuss the World Security Council, and there's another scene with Nick Fury and the World Security Council. So I think in the deleted scenes, you'll get a sense, more of a sense of Maria Hill's high-level involvement with S.H.I.E.L.D.
And
it's only kind of hinted at in the film.
Absolutely. So this is good. And the other thing I really, really want to see, I got to tell you, it's got a gag reel. Can you imagine that cast, how much fun they must have had? I want to see that gag reel.
That gag reel is going to be good. I'm not quite sure what second screen is. They mentioned second screen on there. I don't wonder if it's going to be one of those picture-in-picture things.
Could be.
And there's going to be an audio commentary with Joss Whedon, which should probably be worth the price of the DVD alone.
Yeah. So it's going to be a good Blu-ray, and I can't wait till it comes out. I noticed that there's three editions. There's a DVD, a Blu-ray, and there's a 3D Blu-ray.
Now, if you haven't got a Blu-ray player yet, people, this might be the one to upgrade for, because all those deleted scenes we mentioned doesn't look like they're on the DVD.
That's true.
So definitely get yourself a PlayStation. Blu-ray players are fairly cheap standalone things now, so maybe it's time to upgrade.
Maybe. They're not expensive.
They're not expensive at all. Now, look, that's it for news this week, but I think that was pretty big news. We have a little bit of feedback. It's not so much feedback. It's just two things that we've been asked to talk about.
Right.
One of these we'll talk about more on the film show because I think it has more of a home there. But we just wanted to send a shout out because one of our long-time listeners on the Facebook page, who we've mentioned before, Andrew.
Yep.
I just wanted to send a list out to it's Andrew John Todd, who's left a little note on our Facebook page just to give us a plug to the fact that the Astor Theatre in Melbourne is actually under threat of closing down. Now, anybody who's been to Melbourne knows that this is the film lovers' cinema.
This is shameful.
Now, what we're wanting people to do is, if you get along to the link that we'll put in our show notes, there is a petition there, and it had close to 10,000 signatures when last I looked.
That's good. That's hopeful. Yeah.
So a lot of people are behind this. Big names have sort of started retweeting this on Twitter. We'll talk a bit more about the history of this on the film actually news show, I think. I might slip that in as a story, but I really wanted to make a special mention of it here simply because it was brought up on our Facebook page and we were asked to give a shout out to it. And absolutely, it's something even the Astor Theatre people said, you know, sometimes there are things worth fighting for. And if you're a lover of film anywhere in Australia.
If you're not from Melbourne, you probably don't understand how significant the Astor is. It is a beautiful Art Deco original one-screen cinema that shows great retroactive films as well as first run stuff as well. And it's just amazing cinema. And if it closes, it's a loss.
They just bought a 4K projector and they've been doing 4K prints, restored prints of old films lately. And that's like, how many cinemas in Australia are doing that?
And when things like the restored version of Spartacus was made, and that was the cinema that showed it. You know, it was like, and you got to see it, and they've got they have a beautiful 70 mil screen, and they were showing stuff like of restored prints of Ben-Hur in 2001 and Gone with the Wind, and you just got, these are beautiful prints, and they need to be seen by people. If you haven't seen some of these classic films on the big screen, you've never really seen them. So
just go and have a look at the thing. Read the little blurb that they've got there. Why the Astor's under threat. We won't go into it now because we'll go into it more on the film show. But we really want to just give a special shout out to that. The other thing we wanted to give a shout out to, David, you've got an appeal running on your side as well.
We do. We have an appeal. We are going to Comic-Con, the first Australian Comic-Con, I believe it is.
yes, and I can confirm that we are definitely accredited.
We are definitely accredited, and we are going. It's the very last week of June, so it's the last weekend of June. And we're all accredited. We're going to go in there. We're going to try and get any sort of interviews and stuff that we can. This is both for film, actually, and for behind the panels, but we're just asking for a little bit of help to actually get us there, because it is, you know, there's hotels, there's rental cars, there's everything else that goes on with having to travel interstate. So we are on the front page of geekactually.com running an appeal to get us to Oz Comic Con. So any sort of dollars you can throw our way, whether it's $5 or more, that'd be fantastic. Just, you know, drop it in there and help us out. We want to thank so far Peter Young, John Friswell, and Andrew Todd for their kind donations. And yay! And anybody else? We've set the target at $500, which, you know, if we don't quite get there, we'll help subsidize the rest of it. And if we get more, that's great. That's more time we have there. So, and the more things we can do while we're there. So, just to help us out a little bit. Back to you, Richard.
Look, that's it. I just wanted to mention those as a little bits of feedback we had this week. But I think we've got a fun book this week, one that is looking ahead to the Marvel Universe as well. So, David, it's time for a little something.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
I'm not entirely sure this is that funny, but, you know, anyway. it's not as serious as, say, Preacher.
It's not awfully funny, but
it's not awfully funny. All right, so this week we're doing The Invincible Iron Man. Now, if you are buying trades, it is the trade known as Extremis. If you are a purist and you've been buying it issue by issue, you're looking at Volume 4, Issues 1, 2, 6.
That's right. This is by Warren Ellis.
And drawn by Adi, is it?
Adi Granoff.
Granoff, yeah. Now, the storyline is, in a nutshell, the storyline is basically Tony Stark has reached a point where the Iron Man suit is becoming unwieldy. He has to basically crate it around, and I love the fact that in the book he keeps saying, "Make sure my car is sent to this warehouse. It's in the crate."
People are like, "Do you really need your car?"
Special car. And he keeps basically saying that he's getting slow. There's so much packed into the suit that his reaction times are slow, and the suit is getting too heavy, and it's too hard to carry around, and so forth. And the events of this comic book basically are the next generation of Iron Man, where we introduce the nanotechnology known as Extremis. So, Richard, where do we go from there?
Well, look, what happens is we start with the Extremis technology is nanotechnology, as you mentioned, and the book starts with these what looks like a couple of thugs getting together in the basement of some seedy-looking place, and one of them holding a gun to the back of somebody's head, and you think, okay, what's a hit? But in fact, he's actually injecting something into him, which we later find out is the nanotechnology, the Extremis virus.
Yeah.
What the Extremis virus does is actually completely deconstructs the human body. The part of the brain that has a map for telling you how to fix something. So like when you get injured or when you get sick, your brain has a map of how things should look like.
Right.
And this actually completely rewrites this. And as Dr. Maya Hansen explains, who was one of the people who came up with the extremist virus or weapon or technology, whatever you want to call it, it actually turns the whole body into one giant scab as it's rebuilding it. And then you come back a completely better, upgraded human.
And it, she also talks about the fact that in the book, throughout the series of books, is that it can be programmed. And so basically with extremists, you actually tell it all the genetic things you want it to do, and then you inject it. So you can basically ramp it up and down as to the severity of how much is going into your system. This guy who's been injected goes basically on a killing rampage.
And one thing that we should back up and quickly say is that at the before this happens, at Future Farm, which was the group that developed this, one of the professors there, one of the scientists there, kills himself.
Right.
And this is what sparks Maya Hansen to go out looking for Tony Stark, because she knows him from way back. Now, when Tony Stark's introduced in this issue, I really love it because he's being interviewed by a real-life journalist, John Pilcher.
Yes.
Which I thought was a really interesting move to put in there, trying to hold John, John Pilcher basically trying to hold him accountable for his war crimes. Now, we should say that Extremist is the book they largely lifted the origin story from the first Iron Man movie from.
That's right.
And a lot of people are expecting that the other elements of this book will be used in the third Iron Man film.
That's right. There's already been a lot of talk about the fact that the whole nanotechnology and so forth is actually coming into Iron Man 3.
Mm.
Now, we've already started getting hints of that because the character, the Maya character, the Doctor, looks like she's being played by, who is it again? It's
And I've forgotten her name already. So
Rebecca Hall.
Hall, yes, right.
Rebecca Hall. And there's another character who we get introduced into this book, which is like this old, wizened scientist, genius, who now is basically, he's kind of the Alan Moore of the book, has given up and gone and lived out in the wild.
Well, that could potentially be Ben Kingsley.
And that's what I'm thinking.
But we've also got Guy Pearce is apparently being cast in there.
I'm thinking Guy Pearce is the gentleman who has the extremists injected into him.
Yes, so we've got a lot of things going on there, and I think all of those, any of the things that happen in this book paying off in the third film would be cool. And I think they've set this up. They've set up in the first two films the integration of, he actually says in the second film, I am the Iron Man. The Iron Man and me are one. We can't separate them.
That's right, and that concept is taken in this book, is taken to the nth degree.
That's right, and he basically, after his first encounter with the extremist enhanced person, he realizes just how slow he is.
That's right, because he cannot keep up with this guy.
Well, he's actually basically beaten to the point of death.
Yeah.
He's bleeding internally. He can't fix it. And he says, at this point, the only thing that can fix me is by injecting me with the nanotech. I want you to reprogram it first.
Yeah, so she reprograms it, so basically ramps it right down. And what she doesn't know, and this is where we get into our slightly spoiler territory, is that while she's away, Tony reprograms it.
Mm.
And he makes it basically programmed for him. And what he essentially does is makes the Iron Man suit and himself one.
And he has a very lightweight version of the Iron Man suit, but he's now actually able to control the Iron Man suit with his mind. He is effectively, the Iron Man suit serves as a second skin for him.
Yeah, and what we've seen, jumping ahead, what we've seen in the Marvel Universe now in the new versions of the Avengers and everything else is that he can now basically just will his suit on without even thinking about it. So it's now become literally his second skin.
Now, it's a really interesting turn, but like throughout this, though, we get flashbacks of how he first created the Iron Man suit, which is basically the origin story, the same origin story with a slightly different character that you saw in the first Iron Man film. So he's gone off to the Middle East. He's been caught in an explosion. He's got shrapnel in his chest. This other doctor that's there saves him by creating he helps him create the magnet that stops him from the bits of shrapnel from piercing his heart.
Yep.
He creates the armor that helps him escape, and that's the first Iron Man suit.
Yep.
Exactly the same as the first film, give or take, right down to the fact that he couldn't save that person. And he kind of feels as though that's part of the reason he became a costume vigilante after that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a very, very cool sequence that sets it up. But they juxtapose this with his second birth, which is the second birth of him gaining this nanotechnology and actually taking Iron Man to a new level. So rather than him just discovering Iron Man and him sort of first donning the suit, this is him discovering that he and Iron Man are actually one and now will forever be inseparable.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's a really, really intriguing scene as well with him having his rebirth. And what I found fascinating is that Tony Stark is so confident in what he does that as soon as he wakes up, he's basically in control.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love the fact he goes, watch this.
Yeah. And it's kind of like he's stunning her. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, and you can almost imagine it with Robert Downey Jr.'s voice, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, it's sort of like, you know, yeah, yeah, you created it. This is what I'm doing with it. You know?
Yeah, that's right. And I love the fact she goes, but how did you do this? He goes, oh, while you were out of the room, I reprogrammed
it. Yeah.
Her life's work. And he just goes, yeah, yeah, whatever. I reprogrammed it, you know.
Now, I'm not sure what's happened here. I wasn't following Marvel Comics at the time this came out. I wonder if this was actually a controversial concept.
I don't know. I was also, once again, I was also out of the Marvel scene at that point. I'd kind of lost track of it. And when I saw the Iron Man movie, I was thinking, yeah, there's a lot of the original Iron Man, because I used to read Iron Man religiously in the 80s. And I used to love it. The whole 70s and 80s period with, you know, the alcoholism and all, and the birth of War Machine and all that sort of stuff. This was all new to me. Mm. And when I encountered the extremist Iron Man, the first time I encountered the ability that is within him is in the Avengers. Because I've been reading the new Avengers, and there's one point where he gets injured in the Avengers, and they actually said, we didn't know what to do because after what you've done to yourself, we have no idea what your biology is anymore. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, so I find the whole thing fascinating that Tony has taken it to this next level.
Well, I'm just reading ahead here in sort of encyclopedia entry. He's got the Bleeding Edge armor now, which is actually stored in his bones.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, and that's where it's gone now. So it can be assembled and controlled by his thoughts.
And you can actually say is that now, in this day and age, Tony Stark actually has superpowers.
Yeah.
He's no longer just a man in a suit of armor.
Mm. You know? Oh, and a billionaire philanthropist playboy.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is he actually is he is the Iron Man. He is the character. You couldn't separate him from the armor.
No, that's right. A little bit further down the track in the Dark Reign run of comics, his extremist powers start failing him.
Right.
But after following Siege and back into the heroic age, he's got access to the extremist powers again, and he now has this bleeding edge.
Interesting stuff. Iron Man's gone into all sorts of interesting directions. I was actually finding out today, and real Iron Man fans are going to say, what, you didn't know that? But I didn't know that. But in volume 5 of Iron Man, Pepper Potts has now got a suit of armor.
Right.
And she's known as Rescue.
Well, what do you know?
And she apparently talks Tony into embedding a power source into her chest.
Huh.
So who knew? You know, it's like...
Wow.
So
That's fairly recent, actually. That was Rescue number 1 came out in September.
Yeah, so I mean, this is all new stuff. And in the most recent issue of Iron Man, apparently she gets the Rescue 2 suit. So it's all fascinating. I mean, Iron Man, there's a whole section of Iron Man that I missed, and I got to tell you, after reading Extremis, I am so in. I want to read more.
Yeah, I'm going to read the rest of Volume 4, I think, and then start in with Volume 5. I want to read the current issues of Invincible Iron Man.
Yeah, this is where it's happening. I did catch glimpses of Iron Man throughout because I have read Civil War and I've read Siege, and there's like issues scattered of Iron Man throughout that. And so I've read bits and pieces, but it's all been related to the overarching story. So we haven't gone into this sort of level, which I find fascinating. And as I say, with the Iron Man, with the whole extremists and everything coming into Avengers, I've been fascinated by this. And I got to say, this is an incredibly beautifully drawn book.
The art is amazing, and this is by who did we say this was by? Sorry, I've forgotten the name of the artist.
Adi Gernoff.
And I don't know if Adi Gernoff continued with Iron Man beyond that. I think he or she may have only done the first six issues.
Yeah, no, it's only
the Warren Ellis run.
It's the Warren Ellis run. It's a different artist. I'm actually looking at issue 7 here, and issue 7 has a very different look.
Yeah, that's where they start the executive program following that, and that's actually written by Charles and Daniel Knauf. Follows this immediately with art by Patrick Zercher. So it is, and it does take, and I did read the next issue following that, and you're right, it does take a very different tone almost immediately.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you can really see Extremis as being its own standalone thing. The conclusion of Extremis I thought was also very interesting. Okay, so he gets the powers. He now has full control of this Iron Man suit. He's super fast. He knows his Iron Man can basically now react at the speed he can think, and he beats the snot out of the bad guy. Okay, so because he now has all this power. But what I thought was fascinating about this was the conclusion, which was where Stark himself obviously had figured this out, which was that the guy who committed suicide at the beginning, who is considered to have been the person to have leaked the Extremis out to this, for a bit lack of a better word, the terrorist, couldn't have worked alone.
That's right.
And I thought that was a really interesting turn at the end, because they make mention of it two or three times in the book, but I don't know about you, but I didn't put it together.
Yeah, I didn't put it together in the book either, and I think that was a nice little interesting turn, and I'm hoping that they depart from that in the film, simply because I think it's a major reveal, and I don't want that ending kind of spoiled for me already.
Yeah, we need to do something different for the film. So
yeah, and I think potentially if they do cast someone for the next film in that Maya Hansen role, she might be a character that we want to see coming back in, you know, Iron Man 4, 5, and 6, or however far the series goes. As well as the future Avengers Marvel movies as well. Yeah, so, because she is an they described her in the initial press for the film, the character as an intellectual equal for Tony. And you do see that in the book, and I think that's what's really important, is that Tony doesn't have a lot of intellectual equals in the Marvel universe.
No, that was what was so nice about the Avengers movie when he first starts talking to Banner.
That's right.
And he goes, oh, finally, somebody who speaks English.
And really, you're only talking Banner, and unfortunately in the Marvel movie universe, they can't use him, but Reed Richards.
Yeah, exactly.
Are the only people that could go toe-to-toe with Tony Stark. I mean, we're talking about someone who had a degree in advanced, you know, physics from MIT at the age of 21. You know, we're talking someone who, you know, built his first computer board, and you know, before the age of 10.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he is a genius. He's a peerless genius, who even his father, it seems, had trouble keeping up with.
Yeah, and I mean, even Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four universe, who is a super genius, is a different kind of genius, because Tony is all about the building of things, the machinery of the mechanisms of life, basically. Whereas Reed Richards is much more what do they call it? A theoretical physicist.
By the same token, Bruce Banner's is always more to do with the body.
Yeah.
And
things like radiation and stuff like that.
Exactly. And you know, obviously, as you've said in the current run of The Incredible Hulk, he's doing strange things to animals.
Actually, I forgot to mention.
We should clarify that he's experimenting on the animals.
And I actually just read the most recent Hulk this week as well, and there's some even bigger interesting turns, because the Hulk has to go toe-to-toe with Betty, who, of course, is a Red Hulk, and she's mad at him because of what he's done to Banner.
Are there too many Hulks now, David?
Oh, there are. There are so many Hulks now.
Because there's the other Red Hulk who is seems to be General Ross.
It's General Ross, that's right. Which is Betty's father, funnily enough.
Yeah, and he was hanging out briefly for a couple of issues with Spider-Man, which was hilarious.
Yeah, he's actually a member of the Avengers in the current run of Avengers.
That's right. Of course he is.
And, who is Spider-Man is also a member.
I think Marvel are doing some amazing things at the moment. But this book goes back to what, 2006, 2007, Extremis.
Yeah.
And this really was the start of the modern Iron Man. This of course came before 2 years before the Iron Man film.
Yep.
And it really sort of set the mold for the modern Iron Man. It's not it wasn't a reboot. It wasn't a retcon. It sort of slightly retconned his origin, but it wasn't a reboot. It wasn't official kind of, right, everything you knew about Iron Man is gone. we're starting again here. It was the continuation. It was volume four. But what they just basically did was introduced a whole lot of new information and gave him a new ability. As you said, they made him a superhero at the start of the series. And that changed the Iron Man game forever.
It did. And I love that. I love the fact that they can do it. And this is one of the reasons why I was never a huge fan of the Ultimate comic line. Because I kind of went, well, why can't we just do that sort of stuff in the full line? You know what I mean?
Well, clever people can. Warren Ellis can do that. You know? They did get a very good writer for the Ultimates. Mark Millar did that.
That's
one.
True. But like Ultimate Iron Man has never grabbed me.
No. But I think you can have things like the Ultimates as standalone things, like an Elseworlds novel like DC do. You can't necessarily – I think creating a whole line – based on an alternate version of your characters seems a bit weird to me. And I think Marvel are now actually a bit stuck because they've got the movies going that are really popular. They've got their main comics, which they should be focusing their attention on, yet they've got this secondary universe that's hundreds and hundreds of issues in the case of Ultimate
Spider-Man.
And what
is interesting is the fact that the movies are kind of borrowing from both universes because the Captain America of the movie is kind of a mixture of the two.
Yeah.
And Fury is definitely rooted in the Ultimates world.
Yeah, well, he's taken straight from that.
That's right.
Yeah.
The shield of the movies and the formation of the Avengers is really coming from the Ultimates world, yet we can now see that Iron Man is coming directly from the original universe.
That's right.
So they're fusing these two universes together for the movies, and it seems to work for the most part. And I sit there and look at it and go, but I just don't know if we needed – and I've had this argument since the very beginning of the Ultimates world, which is it's never been something that's really fascinating. Granted, I loved the Ultimates book, the actual Ultimates. I think that's a really clever couple of miniseries.
The two volumes of that, which we're basically talking the first 24 issues, are peerless.
They're fantastic, and I love those. And they stand to these wonderful what-ifs. You know?
They were really good. It's just good writing. It's good stories. It's good character-driven storytelling. But I think it is essential reading as comic book fans. But if you're into the main Marvel universe, it is very different.
And, yeah, it will take you off guard completely because you just sit there and go, that's not my hero.
And for me, look, you know, I'd never been a Marvel reader, and I actually came to the Avengers in the last 10 years via the Ultimates again. Of course, I'd read Avengers stuff before then. But for me coming back, I used, when Marvel had those lines out, I used the Ultimate lines as my way into the Avengers. But I think books like Extremis are a much better way into that universe because this is actually, and even though I love the Iron Man films and I've been wanting an excuse to read an Iron Man book since the first Iron Man film came out,
right?
Reading something like Extremis gives me that same path in. And I feel as though I don't have to go back and read the three volumes before this to understand Iron Man. I can start from this point and completely understand where Iron Man's coming from.
Absolutely. I think if you're looking for an into Iron Man, this is the series.
Yeah. And it's not only is it an in, it's an excellent bit of writing. And I think I speak for both of us, Dave, and I say this comes highly recommended from
highly
us.
Highly recommended, absolutely. All right. Wow. I think that's a show.
That is a show, David.
My God, I think we actually came in almost on time this week.
Wow. Let's try and make a habit of that.
What a concept.
So what are we going to do next week, David?
Next week we are going to be taking a look at Superior, I believe. Is that right?
That's right.
Yes, Superior.
It's also the name of the book that we're looking at.
It's a Superior. Now, this is a book I have not read yet, so I'm actually looking forward to this. This is, I want to say Mark Millar. Am I right?
It is Mark Millar. Mark Millar. It's a nice little segue, given that we were just talking about his reinvention of the Avengers.
So if I sound like I'm lost, I've actually closed my show notes. Oh, no, there they are. Good.
This is, of course, Mark Millar and Lionel Yu did the art for this one. It's an Icon Miller World imprint of Marvel, so it's the creator-owned comics.
Right.
They've done. It's a seven-issue series, so you can pick this up, of course, as a collection. But if you're looking for it individually, it's a seven-issue mini-series. So we'll be exploring all seven of those issues next week in, of course, a spoiler-filled discussion.
Now, Mark Millar books are always interesting because they are a mixed bag.
Yeah.
And so when he is good, he is excellent. And when he is mediocre, he can be really kind of painful.
Now, so, I've heard good things about this series, so I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what Mark Millar's got up his sleeve.
I don't think you and I have done a book for many weeks now where it's something that neither of us have read.
No, it'll be good for us to both come to this. And rumor is that this one's going to be turned into a film as well. So I think it's a good chance to get in before somebody else's interpretation is put on it.
Fantastic. All right. Excellent.
Okay.
I look forward to it.
Until then, when can people find you online?
They can find me at geekactually.com, where we may have some exciting news coming up in the next couple of weeks. I'm not going to say anything now. I'm just going to whet people's appetite and basically say there could be some new content on the site soon. So keep an eye out for that. We'll announce it when it actually happens. And you can also find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. And Richard, you?
My site's going to remain the excellent site that it is already. At therealbits.com. That's the REEL bits, as in filmreel.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
That's great. And it's a great site. I read your stuff all the time.
I moved the search bar this week.
Why?
Just to make it more prominent at the top of the page.
Oh, okay, cool.
So you can search easier. That's the only new content that's on my site. Well, there's a lot of new content on there, but that's the only.
What do you mean, the only new content? Change. You are a machine. You write up articles and articles and articles a day.
I only did 7 or 8 yesterday.
Oh, only 7 or 8.
Been 6 today.
I should point out that the music used on this episode is, of course, from the Iron Man movie. We're using the 60s theme, which people go, that's not from the Iron Man movie. Stay to the end of the credits, people.
Definitely, yeah. Actually, also, I can't remember if it's Iron Man 1 or 2, when he's I think it's in the first Iron Man film, when he's being presented with an award,
yeah,
that's the song the band is playing in the background.
You mean this one by any chance?
Exactly.
It's the 2008 redo of the theme.
That's exactly it. And you hear Easter eggs like that all throughout those films.
I know, absolutely. It's beautiful. And, of course, we're closing the show with AC/DC's Back in Black, which was the... let's face it, it's Iron Man's theme now, de facto theme.
And not to mention a kick-ass tune. David, it's been a pleasure as always.
Absolutely, Richard, and I'll see you next week.
See you there. Now drown my brain in some tunes.
Bye, Richard.
Bye.